Hello, here's your KVNF regional newscast for Thursday, October 5th. The suspects involved in the homicide of two young girls at a Norwood area farm were in court on Tuesday. The two girls have yet to be officially identified, but the suspects accused of involvement in their deaths are headed for a probable cause hearing. According to the Montrose Daily Press, Frederick Blair, Ika Eden, Nashika Bramble, and Nathan Yaw appeared in court on Tuesday for their cases, which allege child abuse resulting in death. Formal charges are set to be filed on October 10th. Defendants will be advised of the formal charges against them on October 19th. A preliminary hearing was set for November 6th. A fifth suspect is also due in court on October 10th. Madani Sias was previously described as having a central involvement in the girls' deaths. Affidavits remain sealed in the case. Little information has been made publicly available, other than that San Miguel County deputies received a tip that brought them to the farm September 8th, where they recovered the remains of two young girls who had been dead for at least 2 weeks. The San Miguel County coroner has yet to confirm the children's identities and causes of death. According to what was previously said in court, several of the defendants had been traveling together for years. Authorities found two more children in their company and removed them into the care of the Department of Human Services. Colorado's first special session in 5 years ended after 2 days with no legislation passing. Governor John Hickenlooper had called lawmakers back to the state capitol to fix a mistake in an expansive bipartisan bill that left certain special districts and Denver's RTD without access to tax revenue from the sale of recreational marijuana. Benta Berkland spoke to fellow State House reporters about what went wrong and what it could mean for the regular legislative session in January.
I'm joined by Ed Sealover with the Denver Business Journal and John Frank with the Denver Post. Ed, this mistake happened in an expansive bipartisan bill, the most complicated bill passed during the last legislative session in the final days of the session. It shored up rural hospitals and prevented some cuts to rural hospitals, but it also did something else. This is why lawmakers came back, and it made a mistake that no one caught.
The mistake was that part of the funding in the bill, and in addition to shoring up rural hospitals, it also put $1.9 billion for transportation and increased the business personal property tax break. And one of the ways they did that is removing the statewide 2.9% sales tax on recreational marijuana and instead boosting the special sales tax rate, which voters had previously approved, from 10% to 15%. The screw-up here was that in doing this, they didn't allow the special districts, which counted on this 2.9% income, to continue to charge that tax. And so you see places like the Regional Transportation District, which runs all of the train lines and buses in the Denver metro area, losing $6 million this year because of it. You see the Scientific and Cultural Facilities District, which funds 278 different organizations from the Denver Art Museum down to very small local community centers, losing $600,000, and that's what they were brought in to try to fix up, to get that money back to those organizations.
John, before the special session started, the governor framed it as a pretty simple fix. He said no one in either political party meant to take away these pot taxes from the special districts. Lawmakers made a mistake. Lawmakers should fix it because the special districts are losing money each month. How did it go so sideways?
The governor thought it would be simple, but broke one of the original maxims in politics, which is you don't ask the question unless you know the answer. The governor thought he had the votes to get this out of the Senate committee and out of the Senate, but it turned out some votes flipped and some people changed their minds, and the governor's office left with a little egg on their face in this session. You can also argue the Senate Republicans who blocked this legislation could deserve some of the blame too. They come across looking obstructionist to a lot of people. There's been a lot of comparisons to Washington, D.C. politics here in Colorado because we had a 2-day session that cost more than $50,000 and nothing happened.
I think the early winner out of this session are going to be campaign marketing groups who are going to be able to put out flyers now for the Democratic side saying Republicans don't want to help transit and arts organizations, and put out flyers from the Republican side saying the Democrats want to ram through an unconstitutional fix that takes more of your tax money without asking you. The truth is, though, I'm not sure how long the legs are going to be for this. There's going to be talk about how to possibly go about working on this in the off session, maybe come back to it in January, but this also could get lost in a lot of issues in January. We're going to be talking again about transportation funding. We're going to be talking a lot about para reform. And who knows if this might be the last serious discussion we ever hear on this topic.
It's Governor Hickenlooper's final session as governor. Does the fallout from this special session impact what happens in January?
What you heard from lawmakers at the end of the session is no, they're willing to work with the governor moving forward, and they'll hit the reset button come January. But it's hard to imagine that there aren't a little hard feelings that will remain, particularly because there's a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiation that broke down, and people changed their minds on the legislation and their minds about the approach. So yes, it's going to be hard to get some things through next session because they essentially have to start over and rebuild that trust. This all comes after one of the most productive bipartisan sessions in recent history in Colorado. So to see it end like this was quite a surprise.
That was John Frank with the Denver Post and Ed Seelover with the Denver Business Journal. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
In news from Colorado Parks and Wildlife, there is a new state wildlife area east of Montrose. According to a press release, a multi-agency collaboration resulted in the establishment of a new state wildlife area for Parks and Wildlife and a new park for the city. The Cerro Summit State Wildlife Area, a 162-acre parcel that includes a 40-acre reservoir, opened on September 29th. It's located about 15 miles east of Montrose, just off of U.S. Highway 50. Previously, Parks and Wildlife operated Chipeta Lake State Wildlife Area, just south of Montrose, for many years. As the city grew, it became obvious that Chipeta Lake would be more valuable as a park. Montrose city leaders and Parks and Wildlife negotiated an agreement that turned the Chipeta Lake property over to the city in exchange for using the Cerro Summit area as a state wildlife area. No money was exchanged to complete the agreement, which was signed in the fall of 2016. The new wildlife area is open for fishing, hunting, and wildlife viewing. To protect water quality, dogs are not allowed on the property. All fishing is catch and release by artificial lures and flies only. The reservoir was stocked last fall with fingerling tiger trout that have already grown to 12 inches. The property is also open to big game and small game hunting during regular seasons because the area provides excellent winter range for deer and elk and Gunnison sage-grouse habitat. The property will be closed seasonally from November 30th through March 31st. An entry sign is posted on the north side of U.S. Highway 50 at the entry that leads to the parking lot. The trail to the wildlife area is well marked. Visitors are asked to be sure to read the regulation signs before entering. And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Thursday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks for listening.